Earlier this week, executives at two of the country's largest alternative news weekly chains confirmed rumors that they plan to merge. The deal between Village Voice Media and New Times still needs to be investigated by the Justice Department to be sure it doesn't violate antitrust laws. But if it's approved, two of the country's best-known alternative weeklies, New York's Village Voice and the LA Weekly, will come under the control of an iconoclastic operation run out of Phoenix, Arizona, called New Times Media. Consolidation in the newspaper industry is nothing new. As readership and profits dwindle, conglomerates have absorbed one daily newspaper after another. Alt-weeklies face the same problem. More important, they face direct competition from the Internet. Websites like Craigslist are now a major venue for local classified advertisements that used to crowd the back pages of the alternative weeklies. Now they're fighting the loss of revenue the same way the daily papers do. Consolidation. As part of a big chain, an alt-weekly benefits from economies of scale. It might not have to pay its own movie critic, for example, just pick up reviews from the syndicate. But critics fear that the savings could come at the price of local flavor and anti-establishment edge. If alternative weekly, and some wonder whether alternative weeklies are even relevant anymore in an age of internet blogs, online classifieds, and community websites. Later in the program, we'll talk about the final report on the UN's investigation into the oil for food scandal. But first, alternative news weeklies. Are they relevant anymore to you? And if your town's alt weekly has been taken over, how has it changed? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our first guest is Mike Lacy. He's the executive editor for New Times, and he joins us by phone from the Condé Nast building in New York City. Nice to have you with us on the program today.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
I have to say that over its 50 years, alarmists have called many times about worrying about the death of the Village Voice, including the period under which it was owned by Rupert Murdoch. But I wonder if the merger is approved and goes ahead, how might the Village Voice change under New Times leadership?
Well, I'm not sure yet how it will change. I was in the Village Voice office yesterday afternoon talking with folks, and I happened to notice in the lobby they have a bunch of their covers, and there's a wonderful cover in there by a cartoonist named Mark Allen Stamati.
Mm-hmm.
And on the cover, it shows all these characters. It's got Norman Mailer down on the right-hand side, and it shows these little puzzle pieces of the Village Voice pulling apart from each other, and they're yelling at each back and forth. No one reads the Village Voice anymore. It's the same brouhaha that's been going on for decades, and we're going to come in and we're going to pay a lot of attention to content and to editorial. That's what we've done in every city that we've gone into. It's not simply about Craigslist. It's also quite a bit about content.
And how would content change, and would editorial approach change?
Well, our operations are magazine-style newspapers, and what we're going to look at is what's the best mix to produce a newspaper here in New York City that people in New York want to read.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking to do what we do in every city that we've gone into, which is to raise hell and have fun doing it.
The Village Voice, I think it's fair to describe, over the past half century, has been a newspaper of the left. Would that change?
I think I'm sort of infamously criticized for not driving newspapers based on politics. And it's my feeling that, generally speaking, there's a pox on everybody's house, left or right.
Critics of consolidation within the alt-weekly world charge that New Times in particular imposes uniformity in the look, feel, and content of its acquired papers.
Those critics don't know what they're talking about.
Well, old fans of the East Bay Express and San Francisco Weekly in particular felt that their papers changed a great deal when the New Times acquired them.
Yeah, they actually started having full-time writing staffs that started winning lots of national journalism awards. So they changed in that particular direction. And, there is always criticism from those people who, were used to doing things the old-fashioned way. And, there's a lot of complaint about, well, that's not the way we used to do it. But if you read these newspapers, the editors in each of these cities make the decisions about what stories are going in, and we place a premium on good writing and investigative reporting. And, you know, really, these are sort of like old-fashioned journalism values.
Our number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And let's begin with Harold. And Harold's calling us from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I definitely think that, one, I just find it interesting. I find that, you know, the term alternative newspapers is kind of pointless when it becomes all owned by the same company. In St. Louis, the old Riverfront Times was definitely much more local and much more, you know, gave alternative stories, gave different viewpoints. Nowadays, the New Times, having bought it probably about 5 or 6 years ago, it seems like it's, you know, the alternative aspect of it is, you know, let's see how we can say dirty words and let's see, you know, how silly we can be, where it seems like it used to be much more, you know, weekly columns about local St. Louis news, and now there's still some really good articles in it, but for the most part, it's just silliness, and I find it less and less, you know, relevant to St. Louis than it was before.
Mike Lacy, that inevitably, when a chain takes over, some people feel localism suffers.
Well, all of our stories are local. The only thing that gets syndicated in our stories, or in our newspapers, you know, we have occasional movie reviews, and what we look for in the movie reviews are the best reviewers in the country. That's not necessarily the best reviewer in your city. But aside from the occasional movie review, all of the local stories, all of the cover stories, all of the columnists, they're all local people. The editor that is running the St. Louis newspaper is a native of St. Louis.
And I guess you can't please everybody.
Boy, howdy.
Harold, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. Mike Lacy, let me ask you a little bit about the business side of this. We mentioned one aspect of this in terms of, well, you know, again, you might pick up the National Movie Critic or the critic that's used in a bunch of papers as opposed to having your own, or economies of scale on that level. But also on the classified level, as I understand it, there is something of a describe your effort to compete with Craigslist.
Well, I'm at something of a disadvantage here because I'm the executive editor, and what I deal with are writers and editors.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you that in terms of Craigslist is just the latest phenomenon that's come along that's supposed to be the death of the industry. This, you know, I've been doing this for 30, 35 years now, and this is a cyclical thing. We, you know, alternative newspapers used to have an enormous revenue stream from romance ads, and they disappeared overnight when the Internet came along and people started conducting business, that kind of business, on the Internet. At one point, daily newspapers all started their own alternative tabloids, and that was going to be the death of the alternative newspaper press. I mean, we have never had a monopoly in everything. We get up every day and have to fight for every single dollar of revenue that we have, and fighting Craigslist is just the latest development in that. I mean, it's an issue in the sense that you can't ignore it, but it's not an issue in the sense of there's timpani in the background and the noise is deafening.
Well, many people though do see irony in the fact that many of these newspapers, which started on shoestrings as alternatives back in the 60s and 70s, well, then became profitable and now find themselves worth so much that they're worth agglomerating.
Well, I think that you always have people who are seeking irony. They're the sort of armchair critics that life passes by.
I think a few of them might work at your newspapers too.
Well, I don't think so. You know, the ironists don't have a tremendous work ethic, and what we're interested in doing is, yeah, I mean, our people, we make money, and our people make a living. We actually pay them paychecks every week. We don't get a government subsidy like NPR. We have to actually go out there and earn this money. And we've found that you attract better writers when you can pay them money. I started this newspaper at a point when I was giving blood, and then it became a fantastic revenue stream when they found out that you could spin and create plasma, allowing you to give blood twice a week instead of once every 6 weeks, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think having a steady source of income, despite its ironic value, is a good thing.
Mike Lacy, thanks very much. Mike Lacy,
thank you.
executive editor of New Times, and he joined us by phone from the offices of Condé Nast in New York City. Well, joining us now to help put this merger in some context of in the context of the challenges facing the alt-weekly world is Bill Wyman. He's assistant managing editor for NPR's Arts Desk, and he's with us here in Studio 3A. Bill, lovely to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Good to see you.
First, we should mention that you've had some history yourself in the alternative press.
Neil, I've had so much history with most of the major players on all the major players in this industry that listeners should take what I say with a grain of salt either way, both good experiences and bad.
Well, experiences as well with Mr. Lacey in particular.
Who fired me.
All right. We just want to get that through in the interest of full disclosure. Now, in terms of this merger, this would create, it's almost an oxymoron, an alternative media giant.
It really would. This has been going on for a long time. The chain started developing, I would think, in the 70s. The Chicago Reader had a couple of papers under its wing. And, of course, New Times, once the Phoenix New Times took off, started buying up papers in the 80s and then in the 90s. So this is a process that's been going on now for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And these papers, am I wrong? Is this mythological in terms of their origin, that they started out as sort of, dopes, sex, drugs, and rock and roll in the 60s and 70s?
Actually, and Mike Lacey is a great example of this. There was the underground press in the 1960s, but then what are called the alternative weeklies, with very few exceptions, all took a special character, and they had several discrete elements that made it. They were free. They were weekly. They had pretensions to professionalism, which a lot of the underground papers didn't. And someone like Michael Lacey, who I think started in 1970, he was creating a paper not to protest the war necessarily or do anything like that, but to start a business, do good journalism. I think the Boston Phoenix started in the late 60s, mm-hmm, as an entertainment wraparound of some sort, Chicago Reader in 1971. Ironically enough, LA Weekly, which is one of the flagship papers in the country, didn't start till 1978. Mm-hmm. So you actually had a decade of sort of inchoate development of these papers. But by the early 90s, they really hit a critical mass. And someone like the New Times was putting out papers with hundreds of pages, maybe an inch thick, that you'd see stacked up in 7-Elevens and things like that.
We're talking about consolidation among alternative news weeklies. Do you use these papers? How important is it to you to have an alternative and independent voice? 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Email is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing this week's announcement that the Village Voice newspaper may merge with media giant New Times and what effect this merger could have on other alternative newsweeklies. We're talking more broadly about the relevance of alternative newsweeklies and their place today. Can they adapt to changing times? Later in the hour, today's report on the United Nations Oil for Food program. You're invited to join us, of course, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Bill Wyman, assistant managing editor for NPR's Arts Desk and someone with long experience in this part of the media field. And Bill, you were talking a little bit ago about the origins of many of these papers. Of course, the Village Voice goes back even further than that, and the free part, it came too late when it ran into some competition. Nevertheless, how have these papers changed over time?
It's really interesting because they all began, by definition, a bit amateurishly. But as I said before, one of the essential ingredients was this were these pretensions to professionalism. What didn't come across when Mike Lacey was on the air is that he's one of the great investigative reporters in the United States at this point. He's written dozens, scores, perhaps hundreds of hard-hitting investigative stories. This isn't easy journalism. This is expensive journalism. And the point he was trying to make, I think, was that it's easy to talk about all the great things that daily newspapers do, but actually he's one of the few companies who put his money into reporters who take on the hard stories, go up against the entrenched power structure, and also look out for the little guy, even if they don't do it with the liberal or progressive pieties of a lot of the other alternative press. Mm-hmm. But each paper began as an iconoclastic vision of one person, which I think is an interesting phenomenon. In Chicago, where I also used to work, they specialized in very, very long reported articles, but there were no assignments. Okay, so they hired writers and then let the writers write whatever they want. Michael Lacey obviously has a different view. He doesn't tell the writers what to write, but it's a much more structured environment. Papers like The Voice, the LA Weekly, they're obviously much more PC, and sort of the people who work there enjoy a political share of political philosophy. But at the same time, if they found an iconoclastic writer who had a distinctive voice almost in any of those papers, a good writer would always find a home there.
Well, joining us now is Patty Calhoun, editor and founder of Westward, an alternative paper in Denver, Colorado, which was New Times' first acquisition more than 20 years ago. She joins us now from the studios of KCFR in Centennial, Colorado. Thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Good afternoon.
You were editor then. You're editor now. What, if anything, changed when Westward was acquired?
Well, I was editor, publisher, classified typist, distribution manager, you name it, back in 1983 when Westward was 6 years old and I sold it to New Times. So immediately what I got to do was concentrate on the editorial end of the paper, which you can't do when you're doing everything else.
Mm-hmm. And so was there any pressure from the corporate headquarters, a phrase which I'm sure was a little awkward to you, but was there any pressure from headquarters to change the editorial content of the paper?
Well, it should give you a good idea that this is the first time I've heard Mike Lacy's voice since last June when we all met at the Association of Alternative Newsweeklies convention. There hasn't been. I mean, we met at Alternative Newsweekly conventions, which is, it's so bizarre that alternative newspapers have those, and we did as early as the late 70s, mm-hmm. where people shared tips on businesses, and I met the people who'd founded New Times and was so impressed by both their journalistic product but also their really ethical business ventures that I thought, why not give it a try? So I was really the first acquisition, I think, in the alternative press.
And was your credibility with your readership at all undermined by the fact of being part of a chain?
No. And in fact, at this point, I would have to guess, because Westward is and always has been so intensely local. We cover Denver, Colorado, and that's it, that my guess is no one knows who owns it and not many people really care.
Did the look of the paper change?
Oh, the look has changed at least 50 times probably over the years. We've redesigned under New Times. We redesigned before New Times. So some of the formatting is the same as some of the other New Times papers, but the content is all completely original.
Let's get some more listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. And we'll turn to Alex. Alex calling us from San Francisco.
Hello, Neil.
Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I used to live in Phoenix, Arizona, and I read the Phoenix New Times pretty much weekly. And I think that, you know, I live in San Francisco now, and I think that there's a big difference in how these types of papers are viewed based on the environment in which they're read. Arizona being, you know, a fairly conservative place, the coverage of the scandals in the Mormon outposts in northern Arizona, southern Utah, mm-hmm. were a lot more, you know, dramatically perceived, I think, in that area, as, say, are some of the more, you know, national issues that are scrutinized by people in San Francisco. You know, there's quite a bit difference in the environment up there, and I think that might be, you know, situations like that might foster some of this this questioning, the, you know, almost dissent, which I think is important anytime you're taking things that are that important to readers and, you know, merging them together. I also rely upon the alternative weeklies. I travel in a rock and roll band, and that's pretty much my number one source for finding out where the clubs are, you know, ways to get a hold of, you know, booking agents and things like of that nature. I use the Internet a lot, but I do rely upon those papers, and thank you for my call.
All right, Alex. Thanks very much. And I think Patty Calhoun was saying he's not seeing a lot of conformity in two papers owned by the same company.
No, you really don't. If you might have a similar format, as I said, but you're going to read the story, and you're going to read a story about something going on in St. Louis or something going on in Phoenix, and what's important in your town at a certain time might not be remotely important in another paper owned by the chain. Music is one thing we all have in common. We do a lot of local coverage of music. My current music editor started reading Westward when he was 12 years old.
Bill
and
Wyman,
just a kid living in the barrio.
Bill Wyman, I wanted to bring you in on that point. I mean, the cultural coverage, especially local coverage of things like the music scene, seems to be an absolutely consistent and critical component of a lot of these alt-weeklies.
Exactly. One of the things in the New Times format is hiring someone called the music editor, who's a full-time person, is expected to write a weekly column covering literally the local music scene as opposed to national acts. As you know, Patty, what Patty's seeing in Denver now is second-generation people who only grew up in that environment. And we have to remember that a lot of people like me were growing up when getting music news and music coverage was a very difficult thing. I too grew up in Phoenix. And, you know, the Arizona Republic was not a paper of very, very high repute. The New Times was the one that covered film and music particularly very aggressively.
Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Jay. Jay's calling us from Phoenix.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I've been reading the New Times since I moved here to Phoenix 5 years ago, and I would say that they do an excellent job of covering the local entertainment culture. I run a business that's benefited from their attention, where we cannot get coverage from the major players in town, like the Arizona Republic.
Mm-hmm. And is New Times at this point one of the major players in town?
I would say so. As far as the youth culture and the young culture in Phoenix, the arts culture and the music culture, they're the paper of record. But for people who are maybe worried about them not paying as much attention to that, I think that there's enough going on in town to keep them on their toes. There's websites like theshiz.org that do a great job covering the local music scene.
Mm-hmm.
And newer upstart zines like Your Invisible City in Phoenix, which does a great job covering local music and arts.
Thanks very much for the call, Jay. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Patty Calhoun, let me ask you, does your newspaper in particular suffer from the same problem that we read about in so many other newspapers, weekly and daily, loss of readership?
We hope not, but we work really hard to make sure that we are always the place that you have to go to if you want to read about what's new and what's happening. And we hope we are doing those really long investigative pieces in ways you can convince people to read them. I mean, it's very hard to read long magazine-style stories on a screen, I think, but it's hard to do it in print, too. So we work hard with our writers to make sure their stories are as good and entertaining as they can be.
You say you hope not? You don't know whether your readership is dwindling or not?
Well, we're still circulating as many papers as we have. Our readership shows that we are still having as many people read us as we have, but that doesn't mean we're going to sit back and not pay attention. We're going to always do the best job we can covering our town.
And do you see, the gentleman was talking about in terms of the websites in Phoenix, but are you being held to account by websites there in Denver and also having to compete with them as well?
Oh, sure. You compete with everything. You compete with direct mail. You compete with radio. You used to compete more with dailies, really, than you do now. You compete with zines. There's so many different sources of information out there. So you're competing for information revenue and even readers' attention. So you better be sure you're doing a great job.
Patty Calhoun, thanks very much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Patty Calhoun is the editor of Westword, an alternative paper in Denver, and she joined us from the studios of KCFR in Centennial, Colorado. And Bill Wyman, let me ask you about this this competition and this readership question. I mean, this has been a problem with the industry, and again, not just with alt-weeklies, but in the daily journalism business in particular.
Yeah, I don't think, as Patty said, I don't believe that the circulation of very many of these papers is dropping. The problem you have is a decline in profits, number one. I don't think any of these papers are losing money, but A, the decline in profits from declining classifieds and things like this. You have competition in some key cities. They're going to have trouble in Seattle and San Francisco, where they have healthy and very rambunctious competition coming in and stuff like this. And then, you know, and possibly what the way this merger plays out with the Village Voice and the LA Weekly is something to be seen. Mike Lacy is a very flamboyant guy who does not mince his words. He could march into the Village Voice and tell the people there exactly what he thinks of it once the merger is done and the antitrust the ink is dry on the antitrust stuff. On the other hand, I think he's tried that before, and I don't think that's particularly going to happen in the Voice. But I think the Voice is going to change. It's going to have a lot less international and national news in it, I think. I mean, I think that would be plausible. And some of the, like I mentioned before, the sort of leftist progressive pieties,
mm-hmm.
I think, will be absent. That's not to say that you can't write an investigative story exposing specific facts.
Or that columnists are going to be, thrown over wholesale.
Right. But just the kind of tone that you get in certain of these papers, and a lot of the Voice papers are that way, the Minneapolis paper, the Seattle paper, and L.A., they're very – they have a sort of we all feel this way progressive mm-hmm. tone. That, I think, might not be as prevalent.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Jeff. Jeff calling us from Columbus, Ohio.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I write for a alternative paper here in Columbus, Ohio. I have been for almost 10 years, and we just recently got purchased by a daily newspaper, and we're waiting to see how that's going to change us. And so I guess my whole feeling is that I understand that the first law of nature is self-preservation, and it's important that it's probably better to have a Village Voice than no voice at all. But I shared some of the trepidation that the Voice is going to lose that sort of original streak to it. And as an African-American, I was always drawn to the Voice because it was one of the most racially diverse papers in terms of its staff.
And is that the case in Columbus? And are other people on the staff there concerned about the possibility of fundamental changes at that paper?
I think there's some concern because the paper had already changed, made a serious format change a couple of years ago when it moved away from more news and longer pieces and editorializing about things to more of a music and entertainment format. So I kind of feel that's the reason why we became more attracted to the one of the daily newspapers, because we're not as edgy or as in your face as we used to be.
Or as maybe you might want them to be.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And one more thing I also want to mention. I don't know if either one of you had noticed, but on the Association of Alternative Newsweekly's website, apparently they're kicking off the Village Voice off their board of directors. They suspended their membership.
Well, we'll have to look into that, Jeff. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. We're talking about alternative weeklies and their future. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tim Redmond is executive editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian Weekly, which is currently embroiled in a lawsuit against New Times Media, and he joined us from his office in San Francisco. Thanks very much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure.
Now, you were the one, as I understand it, who broke the story that the Village Voice Media and New Times Media may be merging.
Yeah, I broke that story a couple months ago after hearing the rumors for a year or two and getting many denials and many people saying, oh, you're crazy, this is never going to happen. We got a hold of the merger documents, and lo and behold, I hate to say it, but we were right.
Well, congratulations on getting the story right.
Thank you.
Can you briefly explain the nature of your legal battle between your paper and New Times?
Yeah, we are suing them in an antitrust case for predatory pricing. Our claim is that the New Times paper out here, the SF Weekly, is selling ads far below the cost of producing them in an effort to put us out of business. And that's a pattern with New Times. New Times doesn't like competition. In the markets where they're doing well, they have no competition. And I think they've made it very clear out here that they want to get rid of us. They don't want two alternative news weeklies in town. They want only one, and they want the market to themselves.
And, of course, we don't have them on the line. I'm sure that they would maintain their practices were entirely legitimate and that there's no
I'm
merit
sure
to the
would.
Lawsuit. But I just wanted to get that out there. In the meantime, it sounds as if there's room for cutthroat competition, which you may be describing, it sounds like alt-weeklies are still pretty relevant to a lot of people.
Alt-weeklies are terribly relevant to a lot of people, in part because daily newspapers are becoming more and more irrelevant. And, you know, the alt-weekly industry grew up as a challenge to the growing irrelevance of daily papers, especially for younger readers. And I think we're still doing that today.
Mm-hmm. Well, to some degree, those papers changed, but also the alt-weeklies found their niche and grew and prospered.
Yes, we have. And it has become a relatively prosperous industry. And I think that, less than declining profits, is what's driving these mergers. They're looking for more profits. There are venture capitalists involved in these mergers. The New Times Village Voice... Neither of these papers is losing money. Neither of these chains is losing money. They're looking to make more money. That's what this is about, and that's what it was about for daily newspapers, too.
Bill Wyman, is that right? It's not that these papers are failing and need economies of scale to survive, but rather that they're making money, and this is a way to make more money.
It's hard to look at a paper like the LA Weekly or the Village Voice or the Phoenix New Times right now and not just they weigh pounds. They're hundreds of pages. The vast majority of it is advertising. It's hard not to see they're not making a lot of money. As I said before, there's a couple...
Hard to imagine people sell that many futons across the country, but go ahead.
There's a lot other than futon ads. Another thing you got to remember about these papers, actually, is that they serve different readers in different ways. A lot of people just want the listings. They just want the futon ads. They want, frankly, the sex ads. And the other thing they do is they identify themselves as the type of person who gets a paper that has big, long investigative stories, but they don't really care about it. But it is certainly true, as Tim says, that virtually every alternative paper in America is doing quite well. But with the understanding that the years since the internet crash has been really hard, I bet, on the San Francisco papers and papers across the board, just because they're losing a lot of the ads, as Michael said.
Would that be accurate, Tim?
Well, I think everybody's been hit. But as Mike Lacy said before, you know, the decline in personal ads hit the alternative press, and now the rise of Craigslist has hit the alternative press. And, you know, we've been hearing this the alternative press is going out of business or is no longer relevant for years and years and years, and I just don't think that's true now any more than it was 10 years ago.
Another thing, I think that to be fair to New Times as well, they put a lot of money into their papers. The budget they spend on editorial grows immensely because they do bring people on full-time, pay them pretty competitive salaries and benefits and all that stuff, have nice offices and all the accoutrements you need to do good work. So it's also fair to point out that New Times spends a lot more on its papers than a lot of places do.
Can I jump in on that, though?
If you keep it very, very quick.
I will. New Times papers whatever Patty Calhoun says are all very similar. They do no endorsements. They do no editorials. They take stands on nothing. They may write some good stories about local stuff. They also do a lot of gimmicky stuff. But the fact is, we live in times when it's important for newspapers, particularly the alternative press, to be out there taking a stand. I have not seen anything in New Times saying, for example, that they're against the war.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to stop it there, not because of the opinion, but because we're out of time. We'll have you back after the break, though. Will you stay with us? Tim Redman and Bill Wyman will be with us after the break. This is NPR News. Just ahead, a United Nations internal report says more than 2,000 companies paid kickbacks and bribes to the Iraqi government when Saddam Hussein was in power, this under the Oil for Food program. But first, let's continue our conversation about the relevance of alternative newspapers. Our guests are Tim Redman, executive editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian, and NPR's assistant managing editor for arts, Bill Wyman. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I did want to bring up, Tim, just before the break, you were talking about the loss of edge on some issues anyway that you feel happens to papers when they're bought by New Times. I wanted to read this email that we got from Linda Brady in Salt Lake City. She writes, the City Weekly is by far the most vital paper in our area and is, due to the place in which it's published, perhaps the last truly controversial weekly in the country. They give voice to the many minorities in a place which she describes as essentially a theocracy. The writing is sharp. The voice is diverse. I think if someone took over this particular paper from the outside, they would not understand the needs of the community represented by this paper. This, she says, from a writer who works for the local competition and describes herself as a music reporter for the Standard Examiner in Ogden, in Utah. Is that part of what you're talking about when, in terms of these conglomerations?
New Times papers are not a part of their community the way I think the Bay Guardian is. They are an outside operator that comes in and buys up papers and turns them into essentially a clone of what they have elsewhere. I think it's fine if Mike Lacy wants to put out a magazine-style publication in Phoenix that reflects his personality and what he wants to do. I hate to see that become the standard for the alternative press around the country. The alternative press has always been different, iconoclastic, a little weird in some places, and has also traditionally had a political edge. The alternative press has stood up to the dailies and the power structure by saying, these are things we believe in, and these are things that are important to our communities. And New Times doesn't do that. And as I say, if Mike Lacy wants to do his thing in Phoenix, fine. But when he reaches the point that his corporation controls access to 25% of the readership of the Association of Alternative News Weeklies, that's tremendous market domination. That's more than what you even see with the big daily chains. And I think that's a big problem for our industry.
Is a part of the problem, and you're in competition with him, and just a reminder, there's a lawsuit underway and involving your charge of predatory pricing on advertisements. But he, as Bill Wyman was saying, they also bring a lot of money into the editorial side and pay writers more. Is that competition also difficult?
Well, yeah, they do. They are a big corporation, and they pay their writers relatively well. And so do we, as a long-standing, successful alternative news weekly. But the reality of what happens on the ground is they become less of a community-based paper. The paper out here, SF Weekly, a lot of their news hole is kind of funny, I think a little puerile, gimmicky stuff. But you don't get the sense from reading it that they care about San Francisco, that they care about this community, that they're part of this community. Everything they talk about, politics in San Francisco, and this is a very political town. This is a very progressive activist town where we take politics seriously. Their approach to local politics is largely bash the left and be cynical. And I don't really think that flies in San Francisco. It's one of the reasons they're not doing so well out here in competition with us. That may do fine in Phoenix, but it doesn't do well here. And that's the problem with these kind of alternative chains. The philosophy that works for the Phoenix New Times doesn't necessarily work in San Francisco or in St. Louis, and it sure as hell isn't going to work in New York with the Village Voice.
Tim Redman, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Of course, it's a pleasure.
Tim Redman is executive editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian Weekly, and he joined us from his offices there. Bill Wyman, pros and cons of consolidation?
Well, as we've been getting at, some of the pros of this particular consolidation is going to be that, well, actually, this particular consolidation, it's hard to see what the pros are. because all these are two big chains that were doing okay already. And depending on how you look at the Village Voice, some people don't like the Village Voice. Some people think it passed its prime 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and that a little bit of Michael Lacy might be darn good for it.
And there have been controversial owners of the Voice before.
In the past, right? Michael Lacy is a special case, though. He is not in it to make money particularly. I mean, Mike Lacy is one of these guys, if he wants to do something, he's going to do it no matter how much it costs. So it's not going to be quite motivated by money in that sense. So the pros are going to be, if you like those chains, that's going to keep them solvent for a lot longer than they might otherwise. The cons are going to be if you're particularly beloved to what the Village Voice does, if it doesn't indeed it does change, it might be changing. On the other hand, it might be something where a little admixture of that is good for any town, particularly ones that are, you know, the leftist community. A lot of towns, I think people could argue, is a little self-satisfied. A little bit of challenge to that might make for much more challenging writing. And certainly the people in all those cities are going to see much more investigative reporting.
Let's get one more call in on this. Stephanie. Stephanie's calling us from Buffalo, New York.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I was just calling. Our local paper is, alternative paper, is called Art Voice, and it does several things very well. And one of the things that it does very well is it's serious journalism, investigative journalism, that can still be quirky and fun and humorous without losing that serious nature.
So you feel that they play an important part, in, not just in your life, but in the life of your community?
Yes, a very important role. We have been having some county crisis financial issues in Western New York, and Art Voice has covered those kinds of issues with a very critical eye, but still manages to have fun with cultural events and other things like that.
Bill?
You know, it's funny. This is going to create a chain of about almost 20 papers. There's one or two other chains that have three or four or five each. There's a whole bunch of other cities that still have locally based, very iconoclastic papers. Seattle Stranger is a very strange paper. The paper that Tim Redmond works for, the San Francisco Bay Guardian, is a unique paper. The San Diego Reader, which is owned by someone who's gotten in the news lately for being an anti-abortion crusader, is a very strange paper. And a lot of smaller towns across the country, you do have the traditional alternative weeklies that are still thriving, still making money, and still doing their communities a lot of good.
Stephanie, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Bill Wyman, we thank you for your time today.
Thank you, sir.
Bill Wyman is Assistant Managing Editor for NPR's Arts Desk, and he was kind enough to come down the hall and join us here in Studio 3A. When we come back, UN and oil for food.